31. The Forever Enemy. Within minutes they were all down the ladder, and an Icarian closed the hatch. If it was Mr. Socrates out there, why would they fire first? A warning shot? It had been a tad too close. Modo looked around for some sign of Griff. If he was still out there, he was as good as dead. "Guests, return to your cabins," Captain Montoriol commanded. "You are not trained for battle." "Go back to my cabin," Colette exclaimed. "What do you expect me to do? Read a book?"
"I'd prefer to remain on the bridge too," Modo insisted.
"Fine, but if you become a nuisance, you will be forcibly escorted to your cabins." Then Montoriol hollered in Catalan and the klaxon sounded. A moment later the ship dove so sharply that Modo and Colette had to grab the handrail along the wall. Colette stood close to Modo, her knuckles white. A dull thud sounded, as though a large hammer had struck the side of the Actinio. Modo covered his ears and tried to maintain his balance. If a big enough hole was blown in the side, they'd be trapped in a sinking sardine can. "It can't be the British," he whispered. "They wouldn't do this." "Don't be so sure," Colette replied, also in a whisper. "You Brits tend to shoot first, then ask questions."
He was about to disagree, then remembered Mr. Socrates' words. "We must either have that technology or destroy it." Was that the goal now? He'd have no idea that Modo was on board. Would he stop if he did know? Another thud, a third, a fourth. But they were fading. The Actinio dove farther, its engine working so hard that the whole ship shook. The comrades calmly adjusted the levers, following Montoriol's every command. Whoever was in the crow's nest would be staring straight at the bottom of the ocean. Colette nudged his hand.
"What sort of ship was that?" she whispered. "Not a corsair. And it was camoufle, disguised with paint so that it appeared and disappeared. It wasn't a nationality I recognized." "And judging by its size, it's heavily armed," Modo replied. "If we try to ram it, its metal hull may be so thick that the Actinio's ram will be torn off. Then we'll sink."
Modo thought he'd been speaking quietly, so he was surprised to hear the captain say, "That will not happen. Serdar built the ram to cut through any metal known to man. I trust his design. I am curious how you two know so much about warships, but we will discuss that at an appropriate time."
She said something in Catalan to one of the Icarians, and the ship began to level out. "We shall approach with caution. That balloon can spot us from a distance and can see a good depth into the ocean. They cannot strike while we are this deep. They'll be surprised when we stab their underbelly."
She gave another command, and Modo felt the ship turning. They sped through the water for 3 or 4 minutes, then turned so sharply he was forced to hang on tight. They ascended, then slowed, as Captain Montoriol stared through her periscope. Modo glanced out the porthole. He could see the surface above them. The ship sat still as Montoriol watched her enemy. The Icarians waited silently for her next command. There was a sudden bubbling in the ocean.
"What's that?" Colette asked.
As they stared, several metallic barrels dropped in the water nearby and drifted down, lit by the sunlight. They curved toward the Actinio as though attracted to the submarine ship. More splashes. 10 or 15 other barrels plunged into the water.
"Immersio! Immersio! Immersio!"
shouted the captain, a hint of panic in her voice. The klaxon sounded, and the Actinio began to descend. Modo gripped the handrail. They hadn't gone very far when the first container hit the side of the submarine ship with a clang. Colette grabbed Modo's hand and squeezed. She looked as terrified as he felt. He braced, expecting an explosion. They dove deeper and faster, but every half minute or so there was another clang of a barrel hitting the Actinio.
"They aren't detonating," Colette said, perplexed.
"Maybe there's a timed fuse." Modo moved along the railing, hand over hand, to peer out the porthole. One barrel had somehow attached itself just below the glass. "I wonder if they're magnetic." It was studded with bolts. It wouldn't take much of an explosion to shatter the glass. Just as he motioned to Colette to come and see, the bolts shot out of the barrel, and something that looked like a large red jellyfish burst out, unravelled, and fluttered to life, dispersing a cloud of bubbles. It grew into a billowing giant bladder, its cables still attached to the submarine ship. Another barrel burst. Another huge jellyfish appeared.
"Balloons!" Modo cried,
suddenly realizing what they were.
"They mean to drag us to the surface!"
Colette shouted, and Captain Montoriol ran to the porthole to see for herself.
"They won't be strong enough to defeat our engine," she said.
The Actinio shuddered as the propeller worked to drive them deeper into the ocean. More clanging could be heard. The enemy was relentless in sending down the barrels. The balloons pulled the Actinio higher and higher. Modo turned to the captain.
"We could go out in the acrosuits and cut the lines."
He was surprised at his own offer of help.
"Thank you, but there's no time."
She shouted several commands and the ship swerved left and right.
"Look, a barrel has detached."
The crew let out a cheer. But a moment later the helmsman cried out,
"We've lost our steering."
Montoriol dashed to the wheel to find that it spun uselessly. The ship made a grinding, groaning noise and rose with such speed that Modo's stomach lurched.
"Knock out the captain, Modo,"
Griff whispered.
"I cut the maneuvering cable. It's Mr. Socrates on that ship. He expects you to act. Put her out of commission."
"Who spoke?"
demanded Colette.
"Who said your name?"
Before Modo could answer, the Actinio hit the surface and Montoriol shouted more orders, now clearly panicked. Icarians armed with spear guns shoved their way past Modo and Colette, running up the stairs toward the hatch. Captain Montoriol paused to hit several levers above the helm, to no effect that Modo could see. Then Montoriol charged up the spiral stairs after her comrades, leaving her helmsman and a few other Icarians at the ship's controls. Modo and Colette hurried after her, the last of the passengers to climb out of the hatch. Outside, the sky was a kaleidoscope of balloons, red, green, and blue, each about 20 feet tall. The balloons blocked the sun and most of the view. Modo heard popping and hissing everywhere. As the comrades cut and slashed at the balloons with knives, Modo smelled gas. A single spark, and they'd all be blown to kingdom come. One balloon sagged. Behind it, just yards away from them, was the deck of the attacking ship. On its side was painted Wyvern. Men in grey uniforms stood in position all along the rail, rifles aimed at the submarine ship. Two dogs with metal jaws glared down at them. Standing between the beasts, her metallic hand glittering in the sunlight, was an enemy Modo knew far too well.